Watch Podcast. I'm Aaron Berger, a Nebraska Extension beef educator. For today's Beef Watch Podcast, we will be discussing an article titled Feeding Cows After the Flood. This article is co-authored by Dr. Mary Dranowski, Dr. Travis Mullenix, and also Dr. Carla Jenkins. To discuss this topic, I'm joined today by Dr. Mary Dranowski. Thanks for joining me today, Mary.
Happy to be here, Aaron.
Mary, as we record this podcast, we're dealing with the aftermath of the blizzard and flooding conditions that really impacted much of central and eastern Nebraska. And as a result of those flooding conditions, there's many situations where producers have lost feed and now are in a situation where they're limited on feed or having to use some alternative feed that they normally wouldn't. Share with our listeners just some principles that producers should think through as they enter into a scenario where they might be needing to use some feed or be limited on feed to meet cattle needs.
Well, I think the first thing that we need to talk about is the fact that, you know, many of our cows are spring calving. And if they did not lose their calves, that means that we're going to either be in early lactation right now or we will be soon. And as a result, we need to start thinking about the requirements of an early lactation cow, which frankly are a lot higher than a cow in gestation. Early lactation requirements are about 50% higher for protein compared to that late gestation cow and about 30 for energy. What that means is that a 1,300-pound cow in the last third of pregnancy requires about 14 pounds of TDN and 2 pounds of crude protein, whereas in early lactation, she requires 18 pounds of TDN and 3 pounds of crude protein. So that medium quality hay a lot of people have access to right now is not going to meet an early lactation cow's requirement.
So Dr. Dranowski, what are some options that we might think about to bring in to complement some of this medium quality hay to meet that cow's needs?
Well, the first thing to think through is what can you get access to? You know, traditionally, we'd probably tell you to use distillers because it's high protein and high energy, and it's usually very cost effective. Distillers right now may or may not be available. If it is, feeding free choice medium quality hay and supplementing with about 3 pounds of dry distillers would hit the spot. However, if we don't have distillers or we need to do something like actually limit the amount of hay we're feeding because we have limited access, then the game changes a little bit. So first, let's talk about we have plenty of medium quality grass hay, but we don't have access to distillers. Then we may just go to the grain bin, so to speak. Something like whole corn and whole soybeans can be used. Whole soybeans are a great source of roomly degradable protein. They're also high in fat, which means we can only add so much into the diet. So for a free choice hay, we can add 3 pounds of whole corn and 4 pounds of whole soybeans, and we will meet both her energy and protein needs. So if you remember back, we talked about distillers, free choice hay, we add 3 pounds of distillers, or we have to add 3 pounds of corn plus 3 pounds of whole soybeans. So you can kind of get an idea of how valuable that distillers really is.
As we think about using something like corn and distillers or using corn and whole soybeans, are there any management things we need to think about from a feeding perspective to be aware of in utilizing those?
Yeah, I would say the big one, especially if we're going to be feeding whole corn and whole soybeans, is that we need to make sure we spread it out enough to where everybody gets access and we don't have boss cows eating too much. At the rates we're feeding 3 and 4 pounds, you know, we shouldn't have to do any kind of adaptation, but we need to make sure that everybody gets access. So we may do something like if we can feed in the bunk, that's of course optimal. Maybe it's rolling out the hay and then coming along and feeding the grain on top of that hay, but make sure we string it out.
So some producers are dealing with situations where they had hay in a field sitting on the edge of the field and it got flooded or got wet. And now they're thinking about, what do I do with that? How can I use it? How long can I use it? Share with us some principles to think through, some things to evaluate as folks deal with wet feed.
Well, the first thing to discuss when we're talking about wet hay is that hay that got sitting in standing water is at risk to start on fire. So the first thing I want to tell everybody is that if you happen to have had that in a barn or a structure of some sort, move it. Get it away from structures in case it does spontaneously combust. Now, while you're moving it, you have an opportunity here to help yourself out a little bit and think about maybe even unrolling that bale to help it to dry out and to keep it from combusting. Watch the hay, make sure it's not heating. We can take its temperature. If it gets to about 150, we're at risk of fire, 170, and you probably do have some pockets of fire. In terms of feeding quality, you know, it is going to mold. At some point, you're going to have mold, and at some point, you're going to decide you can't use that feed anymore. But unrolling it and letting it dry out, if you can find a dry spot, we all know that might be a challenge, will help you out a lot. And at some point when it starts molding, you're just going to have to decide it's now compost, I think. One of the things, though, to consider is where did that water come from? So if the water was coming from a stream or a river, you don't know what it's been in contact with. It could have been in contact with pesticides, chemicals from the cities, sewers. And so likely that feed is risky to be using. And thus, we would recommend probably not using it unless you did extensive testing. And by the time you got hay extensively tested, it's likely to already be molded. If it was from water that was, let's say, from rain, ponding in a field, or snow melt for some of our guys in the western part of the state, then likely you can feed that right away and try to get it used up as quickly as possible so that you know, you can make use of that hay.
So as producers are thinking about now till we get to green grass, and I think one of the challenges that is going to be a ripple effect of these flooding conditions, as many pastures have been impacted by this as well. And also we've had some really cold, wet conditions that are probably going to result in a later green up and a later turnout for many folks in terms of pasture being ready. What are some things to think through in terms of nutritional needs of cows as we move now to green grass, and maybe some things that producers who might need to be feeding longer before turnout should be aware of?
Well, I think the big thing is that, you know, I was talking about meeting that early lactation cow's requirement, and that's going to be hugely important because we may be moving into the breeding season and still be feeding, and we want that cow on an upward plane of nutrition so she'll breed back. So this is not the time to skimp on feed. This is the time to really be thinking about how do I meet those requirements and even exceed those requirements. What I just mentioned about the 3 pounds of corn and 4 pounds of whole soybeans for a cow that's making maybe about 15 pounds of milk, that's going to meet her requirements. If I want to kind of get her really up and going in terms of breeding, I might up that corn level to 4 or even 5 pounds to really actually get her gaining some body condition score. The other thing that I want to make sure everybody thinks through is if we start needing to limit hay because of access, then we're going to be feeding a little bit more grain. For instance, let's say you wanted to roll out one bale of hay per 50 cows. So that's about a 25 pound per cow intake. And we can up the grain and up the soybeans to meet our requirements. So feed her about 6 pounds of corn and about 4 pounds of soybeans. We can meet those requirements. But the thing to remember is that hay was bringing in a lot of calcium. And as we start limiting hay and feeding more grain, we need to start thinking about calcium requirements of those cows. And a free choice mineral can do it for us, but we need to really be feeding a higher calcium free choice mineral, 10%, even up to 15% calcium in that mineral when we start decreasing the amount of hay. And so I think otherwise we're going to run into some problems with those cows not having enough calcium.
If we're feeding in a bunk, is there any value to including ionophore if we're feeding on a daily basis to try to stretch these limited feed resources?
I would say yes, if you're feeding in a bunk and you're feeding a TMR or you're feeding a supplement that is mixed at a mill. And what I mean by that is, you know, ionophores are great. They can reduce the feed intake, they can increase the feed efficiency, and they can stretch your supplies. They also help with coccidiosis, which can be really great in these muddy conditions. But they're also potentially toxic if you don't get it mixed in right. And so I would not suggest anybody be mixing the ionophore premix. You want something that's already mixed into a diluted form. A lot of times you can buy pellets or you can buy mineral that is diluted that can help. Or if you have access to a mill, a lot of times they will take, you know, distillers and mix in that ionophore for you, and that can be a great option. I just want to caution people not to go out and buy the Remensin 90, for instance, and try to mix that in a feed wagon because it's likely that you'll get some hot spots in it.
Anything else you want to highlight or point out before we wrap up?
Well, one of the things that I also wanted to mention to people as we start thinking about feeding those cows, and then if we have those calves, is that, you know, those calves have requirements too. And in particular, we need to start thinking about, I know it sounds funny at this point because there's probably water everywhere, but those calves need access to water. And it's always a good idea to make sure that you spread out your feed enough to where those calves are also getting access to it. So just making sure that both the cows and calves' needs are being met is important.
Well, thanks for joining me today, Dr. Ignowski.
Well, thank you, Aaron.
So for more information on the article that was discussed today, I'd encourage you to visit the beef.unl.edu website. Also at the article and at the Beef website is the contact information for Dr. Janowski, for also Dr. Molnix and Dr. Jenkins. If you would like some assistance with looking at your feed resources and developing some rations to meet cow needs, would encourage you to contact one of them. They'd be happy to help.